President George W. Bush defends his presidency in his final scheduled press conference, and in two separate incidences, two young unarmed African-American men were shot by police officers. One was killed, the other seriously injured. Our Bloggers Roundtable is here to discuss these stories and more. We've got Anthony Bradley, who blogs at The Institute, Issa Yulin, author of the novel Crystal Morning. She blogs at issayulin.com, and Michael D. Cobb Bowen. He's the founder of the blogs at the Conservative Brotherhood. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi, Farai. Hi.
So let's start out with the president who's going out. This morning, the president, Bush, gave the final official press conference. He reflected on the decisions he's made over the past 8 years and what the next president might face.
You know, the President-elect Obama will find this, too. He'll get in the Oval Office, and there'll be a lot of people that are real critical and harsh. And he'll be disappointed at times by the tone of the rhetoric. And he's going to have to do what he thinks is right, Jim. And if you don't, then I don't see how you can live with yourself. I don't see how I can get back home in Texas and look in the mirror and be proud of what I see if I allow the loud voices, the loud critics, to prevent me from doing what I thought was necessary to protect this country.
Michael, loud critics, there have been many, including many of his own party. What do you think of this whole idea of reflecting on the past and trying to deal with it from the Bush perspective, not a man known for admitting to a lot of mistakes?
I think George W. Bush is a man who can look himself in the mirror. He's been remarkably consistent, which is what one of the things that's given his critics so much ammunition. Because he doesn't back down. He's been steadfast.
Do you think that's a good thing?
I think it's a necessary thing when you're the president of the United States. You can't be wavering. You have to make clear what your policy is, whether people agree with it or disagree with it. You have a whole government to move. And as the leader of the free world, he represents not only his own constituents here at home, but the United States' interests around the world. And it's especially important geopolitical decisions that he made, obviously questions of war and peace and diplomacy, that he has to be very consistent. You can't say one thing, do another thing, try to quietly message one party and do something else. So he has been consistent in that. But he's also changed in response to criticism. He has changed the main military leaders for the war in Iraq. And he has changed his military strategy in Iraq. Certainly the provisional government that was there went through some changes. So on the whole, I think he's been a remarkably consistent president. He's defended himself and changed when necessary.
Issa, do you think that's enough to be consistent?
I think that his consistency in terms of making mistakes over the past 8 years is what's most significant about this administration. And I wouldn't even call it a consistency because it has too positive a connotation. I would say that he's just been out of touch. It reminds me of when his father was president and that incident when he was in a supermarket and the checkout woman was scanning the items. And he was amazed at the technology because the last time he had gone shopping, you had to punch in all the numbers on those old-fashioned cash registers. I think that, unfortunately, there's been a kind of arrogance with the Bush administration that has led to a stubborn refusal to consider other points of view, and it has gotten us in trouble domestically and abroad. There was something nostalgic and touching about this final press conference, and I certainly felt the sense of, it was sort of a hallmark moment, if you will. It was a time for him to kind of, you know, say his final farewell and argue on behalf of his decisions that he's made. But they certainly have solidified power for a precious few, but at the expense of the people whom he was elected to serve.
Anthony, another thing that the president said during his press conference was that the Iraq war hadn't turned out quite like he'd planned. I think that's a little bit of an understatement. Do you think America would be different if we had not gone to war with Iraq?
Wow, that's a very simple question. it's impossible to know. I mean, the war in Iraq and Afghanistan has certainly affected various aspects of our economy. They've affected how the world has related to one another, actually. And, you know, it's impossible for any president to know the contingencies, the future contingencies of any military action. However, it's certainly the case that one could argue that in terms of the morale in the nation regarding our leadership and our military, the lives that have been lost, there would be significant difference in terms of how we function internationally if we're not for that war.
What do you think, just quickly, Michael?
Well, I think he's prescient, and he's saying that Obama's going to have to face these things. Obviously, George W. Bush didn't come into office expecting 9/11. And I don't think when Obama first started planning his presidential campaign, he expected the economic meltdown. So Iraq is kind of small news now in terms of we used to be outraged at this many billions. Now we're talking about trillions of dollars that this government has to be responsible for. I think in the long term, the Iraq war is going to be a blip, except for the positive things in terms of its effect on the U.S. economy.
Well, guys, we're actually going to take a quick break and continue with more in a little bit, including the discussion of what's happening with some of these police incidents, fatal and non-fatal police shootings. I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. We're back with our Bloggers Roundtable. We've got Anthony Bradley. He blogs at The Institute. Issa Yulin, the author of the novel Crystal Morning and a blogger at IssaYulin.com. And Michael D. Cobb-Bowen, blogger and founder of the Conservative Brotherhood. So I'm going to move on directly to a very tragic story. So early New Year's Day, a young man was shot and killed by a police officer on a subway platform in the Oakland area. The young man, Oscar Grant, was on his way home from a night of partying with friends. The group was apprehended by a Bay Area Rapid Transit police officer, and videotape shows Grant on the ground with his hands behind his back. Then footage shows an officer shooting Grant in the back. Some believe the officer might have meant to use his taser. Issa, what do you make of this incident? And the reaction to it.
Well, I was horrified to see the footage that was posted by some of those young people who were on the BART train when this incident took place on YouTube, particularly because I'm pregnant now. It was very emotional for me to watch this young man be shot and killed at such close range when he was clearly lying on his stomach with his hands behind his back, probably in cuffs, though we don't know for sure at this point, as you said. Thank goodness for videotape and the wonders of new technology, because this would be just yet another incident that doesn't get recorded and doesn't get any attention were it not for that new technology. I think that the response in the streets has been certainly interesting, to say the least. There has been reporting from the Bay Area of people looting and destroying businesses, particularly businesses owned by people of color, private property owned by people of color. That's certainly unfortunate. What happens when these kinds of demonstrations arise is that you have voiceless people, silenced people, who, out of rage and frustration, amplify their cries for justice, for relief, for peace in their communities. And this certainly got out of hand. I think, however, a lot of that has to do with our economy and where people are today, the fact that there seemed to be a sort of random looting and destruction, again, of things that belong and businesses that belong to people of color, sort of willy-nilly and all over the place. I think people are very frustrated by gentrification and displacement.
Well, let me get Michael in on this. Do you think that this is the reaction of the protests, which were peaceful and then turned violent? Is that something that ultimately will hurt this area as it tries to cope with this this tragedy?
I think so, only to the extent to which we kind of institutionalize this politics of rage. The politics of rage are always with us on the fringe. But I think there's something where we do a disservice to the black community by assuming that people are always going to be radicalized in this way, and this is always going to be a reaction, because there were community activists, political people, who organized a protest, and you could think of them as a political institution, and some of their members got out of control. And that's the same situation that the police are in. They're there to serve the people as well, and one of their people got out of control. So if in the end this comes out where people say, well, we're going to have to burn this down and no justice, no peace, a mob is not a community, and they don't serve justice any better. So they're going to have to find a way to cooperate, and they're going to have to think about their urban agenda and see if the leaders that they elect are actually responsible to that agenda. I would hope that at the very least people would say, yes, we need more money to train cops so that they'll be better cops.
Anthony, there's another shooting that people are paying attention to. It was hours before the one in Oakland. 23-year-old Robert Tolan was shot in his own driveway by a police officer in Bel Air, Texas, and it's a wealthy white suburb of Houston. Police said that the officer who shot Tolan thought that the Nissan Xterra he was driving was stolen, and Tolan is expected to survive, but with a bullet lodged in his liver for the rest of his life. Do you think race played a role in that shooting?
It's interesting to ask that question in light of the last story. There's also a story out of New Orleans as well about a brother that was shot there. You know, here we have a situation where you have a black family in an all-white suburb. At late at night, he and his cousin coming back from Jack in the Box, and these policemen obviously may have assumed that these two young men were in the wrong neighborhood at the wrong time and jumped to conclusions. I mean, you know, if these two boys were white males driving around the same neighborhood, they may have been pulled over, but they probably wouldn't have been shot in front of their own house, especially when their own parents came out to explain to the policeman, in fact, that vehicle was not stolen. It reminds us again that it really takes a special kind of person to be a police officer. What we need are men and women who have the virtue of temperance, the virtue of self-control, because when situations get tight, we need the kinds of people that have the inner strength to do what's right, not necessarily to react based on one's own prejudicial conclusions.
I almost hate to switch the topic because the last one was something that is so powerful, but I want to take a quick tour of politics, and this is going to have to be a speed round. Baltimore's Mayor Sheila Dixon was indicted on Friday on charges that she accepted illegal gifts while she was mayor and city council president, and those included holiday gift cards that were supposed to be distributed to needy families. The prosecutor says that she used those cards to buy an Xbox, PlayStation 2, camcorder, and other electronics. Issa, this is our hometown we're talking about. What's going on here?
I am befuddled by what's going on here. I think that if our mayor is found guilty of these charges, I hope we don't have another Kwame Kilpatrick where there's this resistance to justice. And I'd like this to be handled quickly. It was interesting to me that Stephanie Rawlings-Blake came out in support of the mayor. She's someone that I know from high school, is actually a cousin of one of my best friends from high school, and she's now head of the Baltimore City Council. Her voice in support of the mayor was certainly interesting to me and gives me pause, makes me want to probe a bit deeper to see what's actually happening here if she's being targeted. But at the end of the day, if this bad behavior is true that the prosecutor has lodged against her, then she certainly needs to step down quietly, and step out of the way. Baltimore is suffering so much, really economically devastated because of this flight to the county of middle-class African-Americans. It's just a void in place in some of our communities, stable families, creating stable neighborhoods, And this kind of corruption, which would be horrifying even in the best of times and the best of situations, is even more sinister because of the economic plight of everyday Baltimoreans.
All right. Well, just time for very quick comments from you, Anthony and Michael. Anthony, do you think this case is going to be significant and tracked the way the Kilpatrick one was?
I hope so, because hopefully it'll draw attention to the fact that anyone who is black and a mayor of a large city must recognize that they will be under scrutiny, unlike any of their other predecessors, and they should never accept gifts until after their term is over.
Michael.
I think there's something deeper going on here. They're trying to get her on small potatoes. There smells like a larger agenda.
Okay. Well, guys, thanks so much.
Thanks
for
Ryan.
Thank you for us.
We were speaking with Anthony Bradley, who blogs at the Institute. He joined us from KWMU in St. Louis, Missouri. Issa Yulin, the author of Crystal Morning, who blogs at issayulin.com. And Michael D. Cobb Bowen, the founder of Conservative Brotherhood. He joined us here at NPR West.